Hey everyone, and welcome to the Sunny Go One Piece podcast. On this episode, we're going to be diving into episodes 422 through 424, which will cover manga chapters 524 through 527. And here we begin a brand new arc, and probably one of the wackiest in the entire series, with the Impel Down arc. So synopsis, as we begin the Impel Down arc, Hancock, with her influence and power, helps Luffy infiltrate the high security prison to break his brother Ace out of it. Along the way, he must get through all the trials laid out to keep prisoners in, but happens to run into a few familiar faces that he'll have to join forces with to get Ace out. Alright, so differences. There's only a few differences. They're mostly minor ones, but there's an additional few lines of dialogue added going over the Buster call just before they dock at Impel Downs between Hancock and Luffy. One strange change is that the door that Hancock enters when they arrive in the anime was changed to like this rising crossbar gate, while in the manga it's a reinforced wooden double door. What's strange is they have that wooden double door later when they enter the first checkpoint area where they first meet Vice Warden Hannibal. I don't know why this was changed. I don't know, maybe the anime, the director, or like the screenplay adapter thought that the wooden double door wasn't as intimidating. I have no idea. But yeah, that was a weird change. In the anime, we're told of the 33-hour time limit for when Ace is going to be taken to Marineford in his execution when Hancock was in the body check room. However, in the manga, we are told just before she actually passes through those exterior gates. Another change that they added was when they are learning about level 5 and all the different levels, in the anime, we're actually shown silhouettes of people potentially held in level 5, and this scene was never actually in the manga. You're completely left to wonder who's down there. But in the anime, they make it pretty clear that two of them are people we know, which is Jinbei and a Crocodile, but there's a third silhouette that we have not yet met yet. So yeah, it's interesting how the anime decides to tease you and outright kind of spoils the fact that Crocodile is there for anime only watchers, because by this point the anime only watchers haven't even seen the Miss Golden Week's cover story, so they don't know he's actually in there. I guess you could kind of pretty much guess. I mean, I would have guessed that too, because of the fact that he was captured by Captain Hina and Smoker at the end of Alabasta. It's like, where else would they take a man like that? But yeah, it is kind of interesting they just blatantly spoil that. And then there's an additional scene, finally, of Hancock in the elevators, kind of having a meaningless conversation. And this is obviously done to sort of stretch the episode to be able to fit into that time frame. With that out of the way, let's get into the episodes themselves. So, with the Impel Down arc, we get yet another fun deviation from the normal One Piece formula, but this time in a way of a uniquely One Piece version of a prison break story. And so, yeah, this is an awesome arc. I have been waiting to talk about this one. I mean, I've been waiting to talk about all of One Piece, but Impel Down is a very interesting arc because so many crazy things happen, and it's really fun. Anyways, picking up from where we last left off with Garp and Ace, the conversation they have here start off pretty fun, with Garp being disappointed in both of them not becoming Marine soldiers, but when they talk about Luffy's recent exploits at Enies Lobby, Garp still can't help but still be kind of amused, and I would even dare say proud of him. And of course, Ace is even happy to hear this, as for the first time in a while since we've seen him all chained up, we see a little grin come across his face at the news of this, which, of course, as a big brother, he would also be pretty proud of this as well. The next bit where they talk about Ace's bad relationship with his father is very interesting, as he seems to have known about him, whereas Luffy had no idea who his father was. And we also learn that the reason Ace has a different last name from Luffy or Garp is because he took his mother's maiden name, Portgas, because he didn't respect nor like his father. This conversation is very interesting in retrospect, knowing what we know after the fact, but I'll go into this a bit in the spoiler section. To Ace, though, none of that matters, as he considers Whitebeard to be his true father, and we get a brief flashback where Ace seems to have just lost to Whitebeard in some kind of a duel, but being offered to join his family as his son. With him referring to his crew as his sons and all of the members of the Whitebeard Pirates referring to him as Oyaji or Dad, similar to Luffy with how he's very big on the idea of Nakama, more so than most crews. Even though Nakama is a very common thing for other pirate crews, to Luffy that concept has an even higher elevated meaning, whereas Whitebeard is similar in that he considers his crew his family. And so this concept obviously will get fleshed out in bigger chunks throughout the rest of the series as we go on to learn more about Whitebeard, and we learn to learn more about the crew and Ace as well. And so, yeah, it's an interesting sort of parallel to Luffy in that a lot of these crews have a very specific connection or tie to each other. Moving on, in an interesting twist of fate, we are finally reintroduced to the Buggy Pirates. And we saw them last in Ace's cover story as they were looking for Captain John's treasure. However, tragically, Buggy himself has apparently been captured and taken to none other than Impel Down as well. So we're obviously going to see Buggy down there when Luffy gets there. You can kind of see where this is going, right? And this is why I love this arc. This one moment alone plants the idea in mine and everyone else's head that we are about to see a whole bunch of past villains down there that were defeated by Luffy and captured in Impel Down, including Crocodile, among others. Now, we're never actually told how Buggy got captured, at least initially, but there is a story about how he did get captured, and this is actually hinted to in an earlier episode, and it's further expanded upon in an SBS Q&A. So, and I completely forgot to mention this in that episode. So earlier, there was a hint in episode 416, and in the Crunchyroll stream at about 13 minutes and 19 seconds, if you carefully look at the newspaper and you have a really eagle-eyed view, the newspaper that Young Granny is reading, you can barely see a picture of Buggy on it on the backside. And Oda, in an SBS answer, will go on to explain that in this newspaper, that article discusses how Buggy was looking for Captain John's treasure yet again, but again, went to the wrong island by accident, but this time he accidentally wandered into a marine garrison and got himself captured. And then, yes, we will later learn of this from Buggy himself as he sort of recounts it and thinks about it, thinks about how he got there. And then, ironically enough, we'll later learn that as soon as Luffy and Hancock arrive, he's escaped his cell. So it'll already be quite the party as soon as Luffy gets there. And this whole story is very briefly explained when we do catch up with Buggy in the next episode. But I always find it really cool when Oda actually incorporates these things from the SBS into the rest of the manga or in the anime, which is interesting in and of itself because, yeah, some of a good deal of the things that he mentions in the SBS end up being canon because that's how Oda fills in the gaps to some of these, like, seeming plot holes or seeming holes in the story or missing details or just overlooked things. And Oda would just cram them back in there, even though some of them seem ridiculous or they seem like jokes. A lot of them end up being true. Now, not every SBS answer ends up being true because there are a few of them where he literally is just being tongue-in-cheek and just says random things. But then there you have things like the door repair guy. that's almost as tongue-in-cheek as you can get. But he's an actual character that shows up and lives in the world. Like, he's not just some sort of a made-up thing. And so I love how he throws these things in there and it becomes real. Moving on, it's a pretty funny scene and quite nostalgic as we haven't seen Moji, Richie, Kabaji, or Alvida in quite some time, especially in the anime. But this scene is also used to remind us of the impenetrable nature of the prison and further hype up this place's notoriety in preparation for this arc's main setting. Next, we finally get to see the infamous Impel Down, which, if you cast your mind back, was actually first mentioned all the way back in Water 7 by Nami when talking about what might happen to Robin if they don't save her. And this place, at least with the brief glimpses, does seem like a horrible place to be stuck in with guards being some sort of big-ass minotaur-like creatures holding down the fort No doubt some kind of a zone type fruit, or maybe some sort of an abomination that Vegapunk created. Once Hancock and Luffy are inside, we get introduced to a few of the wardens of Impel Down. First off, we meet Vice Warden Hannibal and Vice Jail Manager Domino. And I'll be honest, Hannibal's character design took me by complete surprise because of how random it is. I think he's human, but he's got like these like devil or demon-like features, but then he's dressed like an Egyptian pharaoh. Like, what is this? His name might be a reference to his face, as it does look like a traditional Japanese Hanya mask, which is a jealous female demon often depicted in classic Japanese theater, although Hannibal is a man, at least as far as I can tell, and is voiced by a man. And I still, to this day, have no idea why he looks like a pharaoh. I don't know if it's ever explained anywhere. Maybe I haven't looked hard enough, but Hannibal is probably the most out of place character design I have ever seen. But yeah, maybe it has to do with the fact that he's guarding something down below in like a tomb-like thing. I don't know. Domino, on the other hand, her appearance and name are pretty obvious. She gives off a very dominatrix vibe. I mean, there's later a character that is straight up dominatrix, but I think Domino also kind of fits into that mold, especially when she gets a hold of that whip thingy. And they're led into this check room, and something really interesting is that Hancock can turn the Dendenmushi, the video Dendenmushi, to stone, as well as Domino, meaning that despite their neutral expressions, they still have sentience and thoughts of their own, allowing them to be attracted to Hancock. And this brings up a few questions to me, like, how should we feel about these guys being sort of, quote-unquote, enslaved? But lucky for us, this was also explained in an SBS from all the way back in Volume 19, and Oda likens this to be sort of like a symbiotic relationship between humans and Dendenmushis. Since they get taken care of and fed by humans, they don't mind being used by them. Kind of like how domesticated dogs and cats are with humans. Like, we feed them, we house them, and they just like being with us. And sort of, and even some dogs, you know, are service dogs. And so I think that's how it kind of goes. At least that's how Oda portrays it. And I prefer to be the positive outlook more so than sort of the grim look out of, you know, outlook of this. Then it also brought up another thought. Why do the snails find a human attractive? And, you know, is this more of a commentary on just how ridiculously beautiful Hancock is that the Dendenmushi even finds her attractive? I mean, I think I probably lean more towards the fact that it's a commentary on just how ridiculously beautiful Hancock is to a comical level, that even like it's sort of an inanimate snail thing would do also find her attractive. Anyways, moving on from that tangent, this finally gives Luffy a chance to slip out undetected, and this final exchange between them both is really sweet and hilarious. She warns him not to cause trouble in Impel Down, but we all know this is going to be an impossible task, especially without his Nakama to rein him in. Then Luffy gives Hancock a heartfelt thank you while calling her by her proper name, Hancock, because up until now he's been calling her Hammock. And this moves her to an insane degree. But then again, as we know, this is actually a big deal. If Luffy actually remembers your real name and starts calling you by it, you are now pretty much in Luffy's inner circle of people he calls a friend. Then we get the return of the sort of the shoujo style Luffy as she swoons over him. And I love Hancock and Luffy. Like, they are such a funny duo. You know, they're not like a proper romantic relationship. And I just love the comedy that Oda milks from this sort of one-sided relationship. I freaking die at the elevator scene, which happens next, where she misunderstands reading Luffy's lips as he says thank you, and it's misinterpreted as I love you. And in Japanese, this makes a little bit more sense. I guess it makes sense in English too, but in Japanese, arigato and aishiteru, which is thank you and I love you, are both five-syllable words that begin with the sound A or A. And I think my favorite part about this particular scene is Momonga's reaction to all this. Like, he's like just sort of this intimidating Marine Vice Admiral, but he's like acting genuinely confused and concerned over Hancock, unaware of what's actually happening. And just seeing him like freak out is so funny for some reason. Because I guess it's sort of, yeah, that tonal difference between how tough Momonga appears, and he's even kind of got this threatening villain vibe as well. But to see him like, huh! Like, it's so funny to see for some reason. And then similarly, during this elevator scene, we get some exposition from Hannibal as to the geography and layout of Impel Down, basically laying out what Luffy will have to get through to get to Ace. Then we get the long-awaited return of Buggy the Clown, who has just escaped from his cell, as we saw, using his Devil Fruit ability. And it's interesting they didn't shackle him with sea stone cuffs, but maybe they didn't really think he'd be much of a threat, considering Buggy is pretty weak. Luffy, on the other hand, gets some much-needed information about where Ace might be, and he gets this from some of the random prisoners and learns that Ace is probably on level 5. And we get an image with silhouettes of two familiar characters, Jinbei and Crocodile, that would be on level 5. But in the back, there's a silhouette of a man we have yet to meet, who kind of looks like Bison from Street Fighter. At least that's what I thought when I first initially saw this scene. It's here we get the reunion we've all been waiting for. Buggy and Luffy back together as he's being chased by a squad of Blue Gory. And the Blue Gory being short for Blue Gorillas, as we'll learn later. This scene to this day still cracks me up, because with Buggy just making up his own fantasy scenario of Luffy coming to save him, but then he gets grossed out by his own fantasy and expression. And the expression that Luffy has with that exaggerated head yelling back, "What the hell are you talking about?" is so damn funny. It's honestly the big head and the bulging eyes that does it for me. And in the anime, this is even more exaggerated as they make the head even bigger. This scene's so funny. Just seeing Luffy with that facial expression is something I don't think that's been done yet, and it was so good. After tiring and running, they turn around and decide to fight, and we get our first Luffy-Buggy combo attack. And I have to admit, though, in the anime, this moment seems to have a little less impact than it does in the manga for some reason. I don't know why, there just isn't as much impact as it should. Like, there's this emphasis on, you know, impact on the punches in the manga, and this sort of triumphant attack, the way it's the panel is framed and composed. However, in the anime, it just kind of like lacks any energy, I feel like, which is kind of a disappointment, because this was actually a really cool moment in the manga, seeing them work together for the first time. Anyways, during this conflict, it's still very apparent the difference in strength between Luffy and Buggy, as Buggy couldn't even handle one of those Blue Gories, whereas Luffy has already taken like 4 of them out on his own. And this scene is also amazing voice acting by Shigeru Chiba, who plays Buggy, especially how he reads the line, "Stay sharp, there's 4 more." And then, "Well, I've seen that you've taken care of them already." And this scene is so funny, especially the dialogue in the Japanese adds a little bit of extra comedy, because the line, "Well, then, I see you've taken care of them already," Buggy actually says, "Otsukaresama deshita," which is a very polite way of saying thank you for your work or good work. So the sudden tonal shift of Buggy saying in sort of this battle-ready, fierce tone, "Yudan suru na mada 4匹 mo otsukaresama deshita," it's just freaking genius, and it kills me every time. And I say genius because this had to have been improvised or ad-lib, because the line in the manga is "de owatta," or translated to be like, "and you're already done." But the take they use in the final scene is infinitely better with the "otsukaresama deshita." It's so funny. And I mean, just having Buggy back as sort of a pseudo ally is so amazing, because he being with Luffy makes for some insanely hilarious dialogue. And there's that next line where he starts yelling, getting all freaked out because Luffy's goal is to save Ace, but then scolds Luffy to quiet down. And then we get somewhat of a payoff to something that we thought was a very insignificant thing. When it first appeared, you know, remember back I told you to pay attention to this fact, which is that strange armband that he got from the treasure that Nami stole from Moria back on Thriller Bark. Well, it turns out this armband is possibly the key to finding the fabled Captain John's treasure. And so, you know, this is the treasure that Buggy's been searching for and has been incredibly unsuccessful. And this motivates Buggy to help Luffy to get to Ace in exchange for that armband. But this scene gets even funnier when Buggy accidentally lets it slip that the armband leads to this massive treasure. While thinking he just blew it, Luffy just straight up gives it to him with no ulterior motive, just like Luffy would, trusting Buggy fully. And this completely overwhelms him with this absurdly emotional response about how bad a bad guy like him shouldn't be trusted. But just when you think maybe Buggy is turning a corner for the better, he then starts to think of a way to get out of there. However, then we get another twist when he slams into the wall, sending them right into the Crimson Hell area. And before we move on to the Crimson Hell area, I just want to say that Buggy may not be as hopeless as he himself or we would think. I mean, most people who are pure evil don't feel any sort of remorse or contemplate their behavior and kind of view them as bad. And if you're pure evil, you don't think what you're doing is bad, or you do know it's bad, but ultimately you don't care. And plus, Shanks seems to have had a friendly relationship with Buggy at one point, which means there was something redeeming about him in the past, at least. Now, of course, as I hinted in past spoiler sections, as well as even in the main non-spoiler parts of past podcasts, we do know that there is more to Buggy than meets the eye. Anyways, back to the Crimson Hell, we get a cool use of Buggy's powers as he's able to just fly across the blood-soaked bladed forest, since his feet can just walk on the ground while his body can stay airborne. And hilariously, every time Buggy tries to get away, his luck kind of runs out and continues to get sucked back in. And this time he gets sucked into level 2 with Luffy as he's intending to run away. But then the blue gory just kind of comes out of nowhere and throws this massive axe at his head. But his bottom half of his body gets pushed into the pit, so his rest of his body has to follow. But yeah, we get a tease of what horrors await them down in level 2, as well as another surprise return of a former villain, this time in the form of Mr. 3. And yeah, I can't wait to see the dynamic between these three, because they're probably some of the more eccentric characters. Now, we also know from Miss Golden Week's cover story that in addition to Mr. 3, Mr. 1, Crocodile, as well as Mr. 2, Moncle, are all in here. And of course, Moncle is the one that I am most excited to see reunited with. Will Luffy finally be able to say a proper thank you to him for sacrificing him at Arabasta? That's something I've been looking forward to for a long time. And we're finally looking like we might actually get to see that. Of course, we'll have to wait a next couple podcasts before we get to see that and talk about that. So the next episode, we won't continue the story. There's actually a 4-episode filler arc that sort of preps you for One Piece Strong World, the movie that came out during this time. And so we'll go over that, but then we'll get back into the main proper story. But if you did enjoy this episode, send me a like or comment. And if you want to join me on this journey of rewatching One Piece, please consider subscribing. Check out my Instagram and X account at SunnyGoPodcast if you want updates of when I post new episodes or to see some pictures of my manga collection. And as always, I wanted to thank you for taking the time out to listen to my podcast. Just a tiny spoiler section after this, but if you're not interested in that, stay safe out there, and I hope to see you on the next episode. Bye! Alright, spoiler section. Just a couple things, minor things really. I think first off, the conversation between Garp and Ace, where they talk about his father, it makes you, rewatching this scene, they really do a good job, or I guess by they, I mean Oda, does a really good job of sort of misdirecting you into thinking that Ace's father is the same as Luffy's father, Dragon. But they never actually say anything to actually indicate that, and they leave it open for the fact that it's later revealed to be that Ace is not a blood relative of Luffy, and that his father is actually Roger. And so when that revelation came about, it was pretty huge. But yeah, looking at this scene and sort of rereading and rewatching the dialogue, I was actually pretty surprised that the conversation does completely work and that it never actually does anything to sort of make you even question the fact that Dragon might not be Ace's father. And yeah, I just wanted to mention how impressive that was, to be honest. Like, because even knowing that fact and going back and reading this, you still really can never actually put the pieces together. But you can see how everything that they said still fits with the fact that Roger is Ace's father. And then obviously the other thing I wanted to kind of mention that this anime version teases is the silhouette of Shiryu, who is blocked in level 6 as well, along with him, and he would go on to become a somewhat major villain later on, joining Blackbeard, as well as having a lot of really intense moments. Particularly, he's the one that ends up skewering Garp on Hachinosu, and yeah, I always wondered why they bothered to show that silhouette. I mean, obviously seeing that silhouette means nothing to anyone who doesn't know who Shiryu is, but as soon as you learn who Shiryu is, I don't know, it kind of like takes away the mystery a little bit. Maybe they wanted to do a little bit more teasing, but yeah, I always found that reveal a little strange. Anyways, those are really the only two things I wanted to mention in the spoiler section. But I appreciate you hanging around and listening, but that'll be it for this podcast episode, so see you later. Bye.